The Good Work. The setting sun was a great fiery smear around the Tower of Chains, through the wintry haze and the furnace smoke, over the broken teeth of the Agrient's part-ruined walls. They'd given up on taking them down, more or less. Another job left quarter done, like most things since the Great Change. Most things but murder, anyway. The Square of Marshals had become the Square of Martyrs, the sea of flagstones chiselled with the names of breakers and burners killed in 20 years of old sticks purges. Hammers tapped away all day as they added more, hundreds of them, thousands. There were fewer folk come out to watch the executions than when Judge first took charge. Maybe they were tiring of the blood. No doubt they were tiring of the cold, bitter chill out here. Clouds of smoky breath as the angriest one screeched insults at the accused. Broad could hardly see the point of screaming at folk already good as dead, but he was what you'd have to call blind drunk. Spent most of his waking hours blind drunk now, like he had in Styria. The only way he could see to get through it. It was society in miniature in the Square of Martyrs. Every type of person and every type who preyed on them. You'd have thought the aristocrats and the bureaucrats would have stayed well away, but they were here too, with red ribbons in the ex-lady's hair and red stains on the ex-lord's clothes, howling their hate at the convicted louder than anyone, as if that might save them from being next. They'd brought carts into the Agrient and opened them up to make improvised souvenir shops, jerry tents, food stalls. Some enterprising bastard had turned a guardhouse into a pawn shop so you could sell your watch for a quarter of what it was worth and go straight upstairs to where they'd turned some administrator's office into a brothel, the bookcases pushed over to make bawdy stages, the desks made into beds, the easy chairs into husk dens. Enterprise always finds a way. Broad gave the closest prisoner a little nudge in the back just to keep him moving. Didn't say anything. Saying something encouraged them to say something, and the last thing you want is a conversation. Reminds you that it's not just stuff you're pushing off a tower, but people. He took another nip from his flask. Had to keep drinking. Nice and regular. Always put a bottle by his bed when he went to sleep now, so he could start drinking soon as he fought free of his nightmares. Helps to have a routine. Kept wondering how many he'd herded across the Square of Marshals. Kept counting them up. It had been one at a time when the trials began. Now it was pairs, threes, fours.
"Here's a triple,"
Salby would say. He was leading the way, flat bow under his arm, jaunty almost, how he strutted across the square, across those dead men's names. Used to be a good man, Salby. There was a piece of him missing these days. He had no doubts. Sometimes felt like all Broad had was doubts. But they changed nothing. He took another nip. The more he drank, the harder it was to keep count. The more he drank, the less he cared about innocence or guilt. The more he drank, the less their crying bothered him. Their arguing. Their endless fucking reasoning. A cuff across the head would shut them up when it got too much. It had been the same with the prisoners in Styria. No food to spare for the enemy, so get Gunner Broad. He'll do what needs doing. And he did. The families gathered here in the cold shadow of the Tower of Chains to say their last goodbyes, to hope for some nick of time reprieve that would never come. There was a woman bundled up in a blanket, her face all pink and raw from cold, eyes shining with tears. She blundered out and caught the prisoner closest to Broad. They clasped each other, whispered something to each other, foreheads pressed together. Broad wondered what he'd have done if that was him and Liddy, him and May. Maybe he'd find out one day soon, if there was any justice. He drank again, spirits burning his sore gullet. It was like taking the lenses off his mind, made everything a blur, so he didn't have to see Liddy's face or May's, didn't have to think of what they'd say, didn't have to put 'em next to what he was now, didn't have to fear what he might do to 'em. Made it easier, being drunk. Or did it make it easier to have something to blame? I was drunk, so I wasn't thinking straight. I was drunk, so I couldn't help myself. I was drunk, so it wasn't really me. Even though, when he was drunk, it was really him even more than when he was sober. It was never really him until he was drunk. Truth be told, he was a man who broke everything. He'd been running from it ever since Styria, and all he'd done was run straight into it again. Told himself it was the safest thing for Liddy and May to stay in Angland and for him to stay here. Told himself he was doing it for their sakes, better than the alternative, that he was doing it for his own. They clung to each other with desperate strength, these two, trying somehow to put off that final parting. Broad had the pain of sentimental tears at the back of his nose as he prized them apart, hands numb from the cold, numb from the drink. But he still did it.
I love you,
the woman called, as one of the other burners pulled her away and Broad pushed her man on towards the Tower of Chains. I love you. Like her love might be a cushion he could bounce on when he hit the frozen ground. Over the anger of the crowd, faint from beyond the Agriant's broken walls, he could hear the dogs, a different kind of bloodthirsty. There were packs of 'em in the streets now, turned almost as feral as the people. Wolves and foxes, too, drawn out of the cold countryside and into the city by some glimpse of fire, some whiff of blood. They slipped through the crowds outside the Agriant, darted up to lap at the half-frozen spatter at the base of the tower. Broad pulled his lenses off to rub at the bridge of his nose with a shaky hand, but even without them he could smell it. Even in the cold, you could smell it from streets away now, the place of execution, the place where the fall passed its final judgment. Didn't even shock him anymore. Part of his work day, like scrubbing out the tubs at the brewery in Valbec, the unspeakable made commonplace. They handed the prisoners over to the burners at the foot of the tower, herded them onto Kernsbeck's new lift, a wonder of the modern age. The signal was given, the machinery clattered into life, and the platform lurched upwards. The climb had almost been kinder. The families sobbed and wailed, blew kisses and streamed with tears, a forest of reaching hands. Wives and husbands, parents and children. The condemned tried to stay strong, the same wearying pattern as ever. Broad turned his back on it, trudged across the frosty stones towards the court of the people. Salby was whistling a tune. All the faces they passed were tilted up now, the light of torches flickering on their expectant grins, the sunset glimmering in their eager eyes as they waited for the little specks to start falling and knew for certain the joy of being the one still alive. He took another nip. Easier when you were drunk, so he kept drinking. Helps to have a routine. Innocence and guilt have made no difference in Styria, and they made none here. No one was guiltier than him, were they? But he wasn't the one falling. He was the one doing the pushing. All that mattered was what Judge said. That was all the folk on the benches cared about, the folk in the galleries cared about. Guilty, guilty, guilty. How could Broad say different? He wasn't special. Since the Great Change, being special was not a good idea. Told himself he didn't want to do it, but he was scared, a coward. That was better than the alternative, that he did want to do it, 'cause there was a pit of rage in him there was never any filling. He'd rather tell himself he hated Judge than admit he was just like her. He looked up the trash-scattered steps to the court of the people.
I'll give Judge the report,
he said. "Ow, aye, you wouldn't want to miss that." Sparks was grinning at him. The man liked to taunt him, maybe because of the beating Broad had given him in Valbec that time. Some men never learn their lesson. "Meaning?" he asked. "Meaning, she's got quite an itch for you, and what judge likes, she tends to get." "Leave it be," grunted Salby. "Broad's a good family man." "Perfect." Sparks's grin had become a leer, and he did a few thrusts of his hips in case anyone was still struggling to find the point. "While one family's up in Angland, you can start another here." Broad caught Sparks by the collar and smashed his fist into his face. Then he hauled him over a plinth some statue had been broken off from, so his neck was over the edge of the block, stuck the heel of his hand on the side of his jaw, and started to push. Sparks plucked helplessly at Broad's wrists, clawed at his red-smeared breastplate with his fingernails, made this hissing, squealing groan, eyes bulging as his skull was twisted further and further around. "I should pop your fucking head off," said Broad. Not some wild, hissing threat, just a dull observation, bored almost. "Come on, Bull," said Salby. "He's a fucking idiot, aye, but if that's a crime, we'll all be for the drop, eh?" Broad let go, and Sparks tumbled off the plinth and knelt, blowing bloody bubbles from his nose, clutching at his neck. "We are all for the drop," said Broad, and he stomped up the steps of the court. Told himself he'd lost control a moment, stopped himself before he did something he'd regret. That was better than the alternative. That he'd loved every moment of it and would have regretted nothing if he'd snapped Sparks's neck apart. Court was over, the galleries emptied, the last few representatives making their way through the foyer, where the marble walls were smeared with streaked slogans, red paint turned black by candlelight. Broad shouldered through 'em, glaring. He was in a fighting mood. He always was. Bannerman was standing guard in the anteroom, sneer on his face and red paint all up his sleeves. Wasn't long ago he'd been beating labourers for Savine Dan Brock. Now he'd joined the Burners and was beating aristocrats for Judge and taking equal pleasure in his work. Chances are that men who'll hurt folk for one master won't flinch at hurting folk for another. It's a job. A potter doesn't need a grand cause to shape his clay for, does he? Why hold a thug to a higher standard? Broad thought about punching him in the face, but then he thought about that with everyone now, more or less. They didn't speak to each other, didn't acknowledge each other. What was there to say? "Bastard," Broad muttered to himself, then nearly tripped over his own feet. Damn, he was drunk. But damn, he wasn't drunk enough. It was 65 since dawn, in case anyone was asking. They'd done 20 just after sunup, who'd been convicted last night in the dark. He pulled his lenses off, squeezed at the bridge of his nose, squeezed it so hard it hurt. At least in Styria there'd been an enemy. Now the enemy was all around. The enemy was everyone. The enemy was yourself. "Hard day." Judge sat in her chair, the chair Risenow once sat in, the chair the king once sat in, the chair she gave the judgments from, passed the sentences from, one bare foot up on the hammer-battered table. She'd a husk pipe in her hand, and she took a long pull from it and blew out a great plume of sweet-smelling smoke that tickled at the back of Broad's throat, made him want to cough, made him want to puke, made him want to rip at his face with his nails. She let her head drop back, long, thin throat stretched out, and he could swear he saw the thick veins pulsing. "You're hurting," she said, looking at him sidelong. "I'm all right." Had he said that? Didn't sound like something he'd say. He was about as far from all right as could be, even further from it than he'd been in Styria. He'd promised no more trouble, but if life had taught him one thing, It was that he was shit at keeping promises. 65 today, his mouth burbled out. We'll do better tomorrow. When she said better, did she mean they'd kill fewer? He'd a horrible feeling she meant they'd kill more. He had the pipe, hardly remembered taking it, but he had it, sucked on it hard as he could, deep as he could, till it filled his lungs and his head, and when he blew out, everything turned numb. It's not easy, said Judge. Believe me, I know it's not easy. She was across the table. Had she slid under it like a snake, or had he climbed over it? But if the good work was easy, it would have been done long ago. Seemed like her black eyes saw right through him, saw his guilt and his horror and his black memories. No doubt in her eyes, just the fire, just the certainty, brighter than ever. Or was that him reflected back? You know why they call me Judge? She asked, and her fists were clenched, and her teeth were bared, like each word hurt her. 'Cause if the world's going to change, someone has to give the verdict. Someone has to bury their feelings and sentence the past to death. He felt her hand pressed light against his breastplate. And someone has to carry out the sentence. Not 'cause we want to, but 'cause it has to be done, and we're fitted for the task. They were alone in that vast space, alone with the empty benches and the empty galleries and the empty slogans, echoes of their whispers whispering back at them from the darkness. We won't be thanked, we won't be forgiven, not by anyone, least of all ourselves. He could kill her now, catch her thin, rash-speckled throat and choke the life from it, smash her head against the table, spray her blood across the tiles, easy as crushing a beetle. He could put an end to this madness. But all he did was stand there. He told himself he was a coward. That was better than the alternative, that there was something in her he couldn't resist, something he wanted. Like a drunk wants the bottle, knowing it's bad for him, bad for everyone, but knowing he can't stop himself. We have to bear the weight of it, she whispered. For those whose names are carved in the stone outside, for those who gave everything they had, for those who come after us. She narrowed her eyes and reached up for him, and he stood there, dumb and drunk, as she pulled the lenses off his nose so the court of the people became nothing but dots of haloed light in a great blurred, husk-smelling darkness. Can't see a fucking thing, he muttered. Maybe it's better that way, she whispered, breath hot on his face and smelling like spirits. Maybe it's time to let go. She grabbed him, or did he grab her? They were kissing, anyway, if you could even call it kissing. Too hard, too violent, too painful for that. Growling and biting, like they were eating each other. He tried to fling her away, or did he pull her closer, clutching at her, tearing at her already torn clothes, his fists tangled in the tatters of her ruined old dress, and his nose full of the sour smoke smell of her. Wanted her more than he'd ever wanted anyone. Hated her more than he'd ever hated anyone. Except himself, maybe. He had her by the dozen chains around her neck, and she had him by his belt with one hand, dragging it open, the other clawing at his face, hard, at his jaw, merciless. Her thumb was inside his cheek, pulling his head down towards her, pulling him down on top of her. He wanted her to hurt him. Her bare feet around the back of his bare arse stuck tight to him, and he ripped her torn skirts up over the tattooed treaties on her thigh, dragging his face close to hers, close enough that he could see the fire reflected in her eyes. You're Mine, she hissed in his face. You're mine. And they snapped and snarled at each other like coupling cats. He'd promised no more trouble, and now here he was fucking it, or letting it fuck him, maybe, on the floor of the Lord's Round, or whatever they were calling it now. He was crying while he did it, maybe, at least to begin with. But that doesn't mean you're not doing it.